This topic's about the parables in Matthew. It's part of the series on Matthew that we've been enjoying through the year. I was a sitting duck to be picked for this topic because I've spent a lot of time studying stories and I love a good story. So at the end, I'm going to say, but I'll probably be choked up by then, stories matter. They matter because they're a safe place to be. A space to be together with other people and to gently reflect on how life fits together and what matters from when you're very little. So I put some good references in. This is my grandson's, Carrie's, one of his favourite books at our house. This was actually Sarah's first book. And it's good because you can chew it and you can squeak it and you can rustle it. And there's pictures to look at. And there is actually a story in there too. He really, really loves this one. And there's Baby Touch, it's called. And you can touch all the different bits of it. He loves sitting on my knee reading this. And it calms him down straight away, no matter what's happening. He's learning how to turn the pages. And he sees himself in the story and already, and he loves that page because he can see his reflection in it. This is a good story. If you were to ask what Becky, my older daughter's most repeated phrase ever was, I would say it's, tell me a story. This story is a story that Peter more than I used to read to Sarah because she wanted it every day. And it's not that good to read, I don't think, but she loved it. And the thing that mattered there was that was what she wanted, and so that was what was shared. And it met some need in her that we didn't even know what it was. Peter is to be thanked for reading this many times. And I reckon some of you would have this book. So this is the world's best fairy stories, and Mum and Dad read to me out of this every night for a really long time. But they didn't read all the stories. They read the tragic ones to me because I wanted the little match girl and the red shoes, and they hated reading the tragic stories every night. But they...
It's called Elise, and I made my mum read it to me routinely. And every time the Little Mermaid started dancing, her feet cut like...
Oh, yes, I like that.
Yeah,
I get that. They meet needs that we can't even articulate. And the interesting thing is that when people read us stories or tell us stories that we need, they feel heard while they're hearing us. That's the fun bit that segues on from Ken's wonderful service. It was, and I think the next bit's going to be slightly less fun. But anyway, it is what it is. Somehow, by the time you get to high school, in my experience, stories start being dismissed as a soft subject that's less useful to human life, perhaps than a good solution to an equation. My disclosure is that I studied stories at uni, and that's where I learnt to write, writing about them. And that's been my work for the last 30 years. So that's one of the many reasons I think that stories matter. They are a place to be, and lots can happen while you're studying them or listening to them or sleeping through them. So I am going to say at the end, stories matter. So when Jenny asked me, I think at the end of last year, to speak about Matthew and parables, in January, while Sarah was having a practice hairdo for a school ball, I sat on a couch at the hairdresser's and speed read through Matthew to check if I'd have anything to say. And I've been reflecting on the impression that that speed reading left on me all year, and I've listened to many sermons through that lens. I'll talk about some of them as we go along and hopefully remind you of the many interesting things we've heard this year. But this is more of a reflection than a sermon. As you know, I haven't studied theology and I haven't researched this topic, although I know many people have written a lot about parables. some bits that I'm saying today could be factually wrong, and I'm sorry about that. I love hearing someone exploring and explaining Jesus' parables. Claire was particularly good at this, being thorough and very insightful. But rather than look at particular parables today, I'm going to reflect on why Jesus might have used parables to talk to groups of people. So back to January, when I speed read Matthew on my phone at the hairdresser's, I was really struck by how perilous the journey of Jesus' life was. It resembled the journey of Crash Bandicoot, a video game with continuous perils from every direction to be overcome by the hero. Probably because of the speed I read it at. But nevertheless, it's clear that Jesus was in potential danger and, while not on the run, contending with hostile powers from before he was born. The people he associated with were in real danger along the way too. Chris Bedding spoke to us last year about the midwives of the faith, various unsung heroes in the background who enabled amazing lives to be lived, for example Moses, by taking their own genuinely life-staking risks to help. I noticed when I speed-read Matthew, before Jesus was born, he was at risk of being the child of a young single mum with economic and social risks, being more vulnerable than others, until an angel spoke to Joseph and changed his mind about divorcing Mary. After Jesus was born, the wise men visited and had to leave by the back roads because of political danger. Jesus' family had to leave their country and go to Egypt because Herod was hunting and killing baby boys to find Jesus, who he thought would be a political rival. We've heard this so many times. Oh, but today families and children are fleeing from Gaza to Egypt, and the reality of the scene is hell on earth. After Herod died, the family left Egypt but couldn't go back to Judea because Herod's replacement was dangerous as well, so they had to move house. As an adult, Jesus was pursued by crowds who really wanted to be with him, and he intermittently retreated from them to rest, pray, and reflect. He retreated into the desert and encountered the devil. He struggled with the questions of how to use and not misuse his own power. When he got back from the desert, John the Baptist was in prison. So Jesus left and went to Galilee. About this time, the Pharisees started saying he was evil, harnessing the power of the prince of demons. He came across demon-possessed men and many scared people, including his disciples. When he sent his disciples out, he told them they would be flogged in synagogues and everyone would hate them. I have always focused on how they were sent out, having to rely on the kindness of others for meals, and somehow less on them being told that they would be vilified and attacked. The Pharisees plotted to kill him. Then Jesus heard that John had been beheaded. The people from his hometown took offence at him. The Pharisees were baiting him, and he started to talk about his own death. He told his disciples that he and they would be persecuted and killed. After he did that, one betrayed him, one disowned him, and they all drifted away when he asked if they could stay with him. Then, during his trial, at the point when it seemed he might be safe from the local political leader, the crowd rose up itself and called for his death. This is a very selective retell, I know, but I was left thinking, where do the parables fit into this gritty life and death reality? Where did they fit for the people at the time, and where do they fit now? As Beth Roberton observed in her recent talk to us, Jesus lived fearlessly from a perspective that he knew where he was going. I think that within this life there was also a deep, intentional, long-term sense of urgency in seeking to convey important truths about what really matters that led Jesus to speak in parables. We don't experience that so much today because for us the parables are stories told by Jesus within the story of his life that we read in the Bible. They weren't told out loud to us by Jesus. These spoken passages are interspersed between the day-to-day and significant events in his life. So we have the option of studying them as literature, but I've found that I don't want to do that. I liked the approach Beth took when she spoke to us. She felt that there were two ways to look at who Jesus was to her. The meta story of Jesus Christ, the story of Jesus in the big picture of salvation, redemption, and God. And alternatively, the life that Jesus the man lived, the more detailed everyday reality. How he responded to people with compassion and care in this harsh, harsh world. Like Beth and most of the speakers I've heard this year, such as Michael Bell, who spoke about upsetting events in his street and where his faith fitted with his response to them, I would like to reflect on the parables at this more day-to-day level of ordinary life. And I really recommend you re-listening to Beth's sermon. I just think it was so wonderful. So why did Jesus speak to people in parables? If time was precious and his life was to be short, surely he should have used the time to be very clear and direct, rather than use analogies about the kingdom of God. Luckily, his disciples asked him why he spoke to groups of people in parables, and he answered their question. Because the knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, but not to them, the people out there. Whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. This is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah. You will be ever hearing, but never understanding. You will be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For this people's heart has become calloused. They hardly hear with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and in turn I would heal them. Jesus said that the people that came to hear him speak didn't hear him or understand what he said because they had calloused hearts. And because they didn't understand with their hearts, Jesus couldn't heal them. I don't think that Jesus was condemning them for being hardened. Calluses are a hardening that stops pain, and they're caused by coming up again and again against hard things, which happens as life goes on. The problem is that while the scar tissue from our past hurts and protects us from more pain, it can also stop us experiencing a healing touch. My impression is that today is not different. Many people in the first world at least are very cynical to the point that they distrust a great deal of things that were previously trusted. Some of it is rational and some is not. But wherever scepticism is linked with fear, as Jeff Bice said a couple of weeks ago to us, it can put brakes on new hope, change and good things happening. In reaching out to people using a different tack with parables, we can see that Jesus did not give up on these hardened people, and this is an important model for us. What I don't think Jesus was saying was, blow them, they don't get it anyway, so I might as well talk to them in riddles, and I'll just explain God's way to my best friends because you're special. I think he was being realistic and finding a more subtle way to get through to them. This was part of his compassionate response to people living with the impacts of a harsh and hardened world, a workaround to reach us beyond our cynicism. A story, a movie, a play can touch us when the 7 o'clock news doesn't touch us anymore. In contemporary words, I think Jesus was concerned with real accessibility. Parables were a solution to reaching people partly because stories have a better chance of being heard and remembered than instructions, as we know. Parables weren't put in religious language, so they had a better chance of connecting with people who might automatically tune out from religious instruction, as they do today. As well, stories are gentler and less confrontational than rules and commandments. Rather, parables paint a glimpse of the world and a new, different way to be in it. Parables were spoken in the ordinary language of the day, again, to rich people. Today we have challenges with the old translations of the language Jesus used that can make Jesus' teachings seem more abstract and less connected to real life than they actually are. He spoke normally to people. Harry and Heather's reflections when they looked at Jesus' mountaintop statement from the heart, if you recall, the Beatitudes, using Eugene Peterson's paraphrasing, really highlighted for me that much of the language of the Bible isn't quite real for me in terms of understanding with my heart. The purpose of this book, The Message, is to try to help people really listen to the message of the Bible to help apply it in our own lives. For example, the meek shall inherit the earth. The word meek doesn't capture anything helpful for me. It makes me think of mice and beige cardigans. And I've got a beige cardigan. And the message doesn't seem to be about now but later. But Heather read the paraphrase to us. You are blessed when you are You can tell when I really like something when I go, oh. You are blessed when you are content with just the way you are. No more, no less. That's the moment you find yourself the proud owner of everything that can't be bought. That made sense to me. I also really like the paraphrasing of love your enemies, because I can see how to put it into practice. Particularly the part, let them bring out the best in you, not the worst in you. I do know what it's like when I've let the worst in me be brought out, and it's bad all round. In the same way, I think Jesus chose accessible language to help people apply ideas to their lives. So as well as the language, the settings and the details of the parables were familiar. The listeners only had to consider the new way of being in familiar settings, not a different everyday world. They knew their way around the idea of workers in vineyards and a day's pay, how wineskins work, getting ready and being prepared for a wedding. The choice of these topics also reflect that Jesus knew what people's lives were like and that he lived among them. Behind these brief, momentary illustrations of what really matters, Jesus spent lengths of ordinary time with people, noticed them and what they were doing, got to know them. So the power of these analogies came from them being the fruit of the time he had shared with them. And when I was getting ready for a service, I came across a fantastic quote about this. He was present in the temple, but not just in the temple. He was present where women made bread in the kitchen and when women mended clothes in the sun, so that he could find the language with which to tell bakers and menders about God's kingdom. He was present in the synagogue, but not just in the synagogue. He was present where farmers sowed fields, harvested crops and hired labourers, so that he could find the language to let farmers and farmhands know what God intended. Isn't that fantastic? Love that. As a slightly side issue, I see the miracles of the loaves and fishes as a result of Jesus spending real lifetime with people, being present. The crowd was with him for so long on those occasions that they got hungry. And over this time, with him telling stories and teaching, the real miracle that evolved was that people shared generously with strangers, and there was enough food for everyone. The softening effect when we give the gift of being fully present. I see this as a model for us and the message of Advent, Jesus with us, which I'm a week too early for. Never mind. Starts next week. The other thing about these relevant topics was that because they were stories, they were memorable. I don't know how many of his audience were literate or had access to written material, but I think Jesus wanted people to remember what he said. Stories are usually visual, not just words, such as lists of instructions, for example. Stories are portable and available, Stories about falling off a bike 50 years ago are still there. They belong to us and we can retell them. H.G. Nelson, Greg Pickhaver, who was a great storyteller, said in an interview that storytelling had been a wonderful life-giving part of his life as a person with dyslexia. Stories are fun to listen to, accessible for most people, and we relax when we're listening to a story. But the interesting thing about the parables is you can't tell straight away what they mean. Jesus found this even with his disciples, who he thought he had already got through to. The essence of a parable needs to be winkled out. How is this helpful? Well, you don't dismiss a puzzle mentally, like you might an instruction when you think you've grasped it all. Oh yes, don't steal. I know. Puzzles are more likely to wake you up at 3 a.m. or niggle at you till you get them. I don't know what the cognitive psychologists say about this, but maybe the question of what a story really means and how it applies to our life helps the story to stay alive as something that is not fully resolved. Once locked into our mind, we can reflect on a story any time we like, and its meaning can deepen for us over time or apply in different settings. And I think we all know that sometimes there is a right time to understand an idea, and it might not be now. We sometimes notice things that we didn't get before, but now we do. A brief story or an analogy is a very efficient way of filing an idea away, to nut out or to be helped by, or to help others with at some point in the future. So stories are a very good way of conveying an idea to the heart and then the mind. I think Jesus wanted to get through to people because it was really important to him to touch their real lives. I had a funny experience earlier this year when I realised I had used an analogy with a group of people as an act of desperation without thinking much. And that sort of highlighted why I think Jesus knew his message was important. The topic of the voice referendum had come up earlier this year at work, in the months before these discussions became a more self-conscious thing to do, when you knew there were different perspectives all around. A small group of my colleagues I was with had quite a different understanding from mine. They had many issues and fears I hadn't even come across yet, and I felt that the main point of the question was being missed. I found myself saying that choosing not to have First Nations people in the Australian Constitution would be like if a particular team at work was completely left out of the organisation chart. It just wouldn't make sense. And how bad and confused would that team feel? I was using our shared language about organisational life to communicate because I really wanted them to get it. I didn't fully succeed. But looking back on this attempt at connecting on my part, I think this is part of what was happening when Jesus spoke in parables. Bringing it back to today, I think Jeff Bice's discussion about three parables 2 weeks ago was a good example of how parables are meant to work. If you recall, and it's on the website, so you can listen to it, thanks to Greg and Ross. They're all about active waiting. The parable of the women with the oil lamps who needed to prepare and properly organise for a wedding. The parable of the talents about being productive and active. And the parable of the sheep and the goats about being compassionate and seeking justice, even if we can't see we are serving Jesus himself when we are serving others. Jeff saw a message for the church today in this, as much as in Jesus' time, about how to practically live out the vision of making the world a better place. It was the kernel of the idea and practical. He didn't extend the metaphors or get stuck on any cultural distractions that weren't about the idea itself. So what I'm moving towards saying is that the parables are important and meant to touch real life. And we were given a great example by Tim Finney again earlier this year of what happens if we don't respect the real life matters underlying the stories in our harsh world. He talked about the book of Revelations and other books of the Bible as material written in a specific place and time with real life importance. I hadn't heard his explanation of the number 666, the mark of the beast, as being code for Nero Caesar. Worked out via the correspondences for the words Nero and beast and 666 across Greek and Latin. This was a political message, and it had to be in code for reasons of human safety due to real danger. He also discussed the reasons for inconsistent references to Peter in Acts, and I think John, as being intermittently about identity and location protection in the face of danger. Not sloppy writing of a story where people weren't concentrating. We would get this in a non-fictional or a fictional war thriller. So this really mattered in real life, in the present. And it was poles away from the bizarre literal surface of the story and the weird things that happen when it falls into the wrong hands that people say what it means, seeing it more as a vision, falling for the disguise and not connected to daily life at that time. He also discussed the situation in Acts where Peter is on the run from Herod, Jesus, Herod's son, and knocks on the door while people are praying for his release from prison and they don't believe it's him. This is a humorous warning that you've gone in too deep if you get so caught up in an activity that you forget its purpose and its link with reality. Look for the connection with real life. To draw this to an end, we know that Jesus spoke very plainly about the need to put his teaching into practice in real life, that the vision and really bringing it about belong together. Therefore, everyone who hears these words and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. Peter Oliver spoke recently to us about the word for teacher that Jesus used to describe himself, which Peter noted referred both to the spiritual, religious teachers and the secular teachers who were the equivalent of university professors outside the religious enclave. The spiritual and the ethics of living in the world both matter. We live in the visible, tangible world where the physically invisible realities of life also matter. The two are connected and both matter for our world to be transformed. So whether we do something with what we learn in the parables, these stories matters. Jesus spent his important time teaching us how to live in the real world, making ideas accessible so we can make sense of them and put them into practice. He honoured the woman who anointed his feet with precious oils because she had listened carefully and understood and believed his story, that he would be put to death. And she acted on it by preparing him for his burial. As Beth said, somehow we too need to do the hard personal work to be able to be present to hear each other's stories. We understand that the disciples, who came out the worse in this passage as well, probably dismissed Jesus' message that he would die because they just couldn't bear the pain of his story. So sometimes stories are hard to hear because of the very way they connect us to real life. We have lots of stories as a country that we need to listen to, hear and share. And a reminder today, I hope, that stories, parables, were a central space that Jesus created, wove together, for people to safely hear his important truths. He says that hearing and understanding with the heart must happen first before healing. Our culture is relearning now, perhaps, the need to have ears and hearts to hear one another's stories with respect. And this matters because respect can change lives. We have a way to go, but we have the example of the care that Jesus gave to sharing glimpses of a better world to help us appreciate that stories really matter.
Thank you for such richness. It's wonderful.